Hi, and welcome to the Making Our Way podcast. This week, our guest is Max King from Camp Arrowhead for Boys, and we talk about the obsidian knife he made for last year's Maker Swap. Thanks for listening.
Hey, guys.
Good to see you.
What's up, Christy? How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
Good, good.
Who's been up to what? What you got, Austin?
And I've been building sheds. My dad decided he was going to buy a bunch of sheds.
I saw that.
Yeah.
What do you mean a bunch of sheds?
So like, you know,
like
those
tough
little
sheds from Lowe's?
Well, it's not the plastic ones. These are like the metal bolt together
sheds. Oh, yeah. Okay.
The biggest pieces of crap on the planet. This shed, dude, he didn't pay hardly any money for it, I don't think.
Oh, but well, that's good.
It's like an 8x4 single lean shed. And so it's going against the back of the shipping container to like basically make a little lean to off the back. And the dust collector and the air compressor are going in there for the
wood. Nice. In the wood shed.
In the wood shed. Yeah. Okay. Or the shipping container.
Shipping container. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where's behind the, how's the van?
It's behind the shipping container, so it'll be to the right of the van.
Okay.
Yeah. And every single piece of metal in this thing, to save the paint, they shrink wrapped it. And then I don't know if because it just sat in like a storage warehouse for who knows how long, getting hot, it all was like super stuck. So imagine just like, so 8x4, 8 foot tall, every single square foot of it had to have it peeled. So there was me, my dad, my Uncle Joe, were all peeling plastic for 3 hours to get it ready to build. Three people peeling for 3 hours.
You couldn't have left
That's
the plastic?
Crazy.
Huh?
Didn't want to leave the plastic? It was just ugly? Or?
Well, so I was like, let's leave it. Let's leave it. And my dad's like, you know what's going to happen? It's going to start peeling and look a like little shit. Bit at a time and look terrible.
Yeah, he's right.
And I was like, yeah, you're probably right. So, and that was like, we were almost all the way through. And I was like, I wonder if I just torch it for a second, if it was just like, you know, and he's like, I'm not risking it. Like, we're almost done. Just finish it up.
So how good is like it from like water resistant as far as, you know, running water off? Is it going to be
this thing? When you walk inside, there is more daylight coming through every freaking seam. It's unbelievable. It's such a piece of crap.
You didn't like cut the seams or anything?
You can't because it's corrugated steel. And so normally a corrugated steel, there's foam inserts that when you screw it in, it seals those corrugations. This one doesn't have it. So there's just straight up air. And it's like quarter inch away from the, like tons of quarter inch openings all around. And he's like, well, the idea is it gets tons of airflow. And I was like, the idea is it gets every freaking creature under man living in
here. Yeah, bug and rat and roach and mouse.
Yeah. Right. And we're only using it for dust collector and an air compressor. Like, that's literally the only things that it's going to be in there. So it's not going to be a big deal. In fact, it's probably better that those have some cooling ability.
That's
true. You know, like airflow to go past the motors. But I don't know, junk, piece of junk. So he bought two of these, and one's even bigger. We didn't start on that because it took me a day and a half, three of us, a day and a half to build this thing. I was like, Dad, I almost built the entire lean-to at blacksmith shop in a day and a half. Like, don't buy the, I mean, but the thing is, because I'm sure they're subsidized by China. So you couldn't have bought the material for what we bought the whole thing for, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, we could stick build it. Twice or three times as fast. And he's like, yeah, but like it would have cost three times as much. So yeah. I don't know. I don't know where we're at on that. It actually, like, it's like a 20 footer from 20 foot away. You're like, wow, that looks really good. And then you walk up close, you're like, this looks like a piece of crap. So
yeah, I was kind of wondering about that. That's the same size as my deer stand. So that's why I was curious if we needed to upgrade. So anyway, yeah.
No, I wouldn't trust it. And especially like the storms that you guys have out there.
That's true.
I mean, it's not. So we did like a plywood deck, basically, you know, framed it out with 2x4s.
A big deck or?
No, like 8x4 decks. Yeah.
Oh.
It's a smaller deck. It's still capable. But
is it,
we put
4x4.
4x4 skids on the bottom so we could get the forks under it so that we can actually move this thing around with the tractor. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. That's a good idea.
Yeah. So when it blows away, you can move it back.
Yeah, we can put it back after the hurricane. Or if it floats away, yeah. That's more like it. We actually build a base like a raft.
Well, will you, like, is that, that's not an area though that's flooded, though. Okay.
Yeah, okay, they will know. If it floods there, I'm in trouble. Yeah. But yeah, that's, and we also got sun, I got sunburnt in, was it February or is it January still? I don't
January.
Know. January. Yeah, so I got sunburnt in January, which is awesome. It's like 70 degrees while we're working on it.
Nice.
Shit, that's nice.
So what have you been up to, Dean?
So it's been raining in Texas like every day. Last Sunday. Oh, so Saturday we bought Kristen a car and totally got taken advantage of. Just quickly, like, we pushed back on the sales price and the trade-in and all that stuff, and we thought we did okay. And they gave us $8,000 for her Jeep, which we were very disappointed in. We went to two dealers and both offered the exact same amount. So we're like, well, I guess that's what it is, you know? They listed the Jeep on Monday for $17,900, sold it on Tuesday, and called and asked us if we had the back seat, because we still have the back seat at home. So in one day, they sold it for twice what they gave us for the trade-in value. So I have to drive down there tomorrow to drop off the back seat, and I'm thinking about just throwing it in the parking lot. Like, I'm so fucking pissed. Like, I don't know. It was just, they made such a big deal about everything, and you don't do this all the time, and they do, and they have all the information. You have nothing. The only tool you have is walking out.
Right.
We probably should have. But I've been driving around for six fucking hours looking at cars, been to multiple dealers, getting multiple appraisals, and they just kill your time. They're sucking my time away. And there's other things I wanted to do with my day. And so when it came time, we were there 45 minutes after they closed, before they finally, everything was done. But she's super happy. She got a Volkswagen GTI. So it's a Golf GTI. And it's really fancy. And it's the first car she's ever had with a screen. You know, she's never had a car with a screen, just the regular radios or whatever. And this one's got all kind of crazy stuff. So she's excited. Good. Every day she's been coming home from work, she's been in a good mood. Usually she's in a bad mood because she's shifting that Jeep. Well, now she's shifting this Volkswagen, and it's fun. And she stays in the driveway for about 30 minutes learning something new. Like, oh, I programmed the clock today. It only took me 45 minutes. Or, you know, I figured out how to shift the drive to sport mode or whatever. But yeah, she's really happy. And then on Sunday, I was back here watching. Actually, the Chiefs played on Sunday, right?
Yes, they did.
It was the Chiefs game I was watching. And I was just looking around my shop, and I was like, there's something not right. Like, something is not optimally placed. And it was this cabinet that I had right here on the side of my computer desk. I was like, where can I put this cabinet? And the only place I could figure is I've got these two closets all the way in the back. And that's where I have, like, we have like our luggage and sports jerseys that I'm never going to wear and Legos that haven't been built yet and all that stuff. And I said, you know what? Anything of Kristen's is getting evicted out of my shop. This is the workshop. If it's not mine, it's getting kicked out. And so in one closet, this was what was in one closet, two full-size seats out of a car.
Oh.
Four rubber totes with the you know, big rubber totes. I don't know, they're 35 gallon or whatever, or however big they are, filled with t-shirts from when she played softball that she's going to get a blanket made out of. I've been hearing the same thing for 15 years.
Yes. My sister makes those, if you want coordinate that on a side note.
So four of those totes filled to the top with blanket, with shirts. Every CD we've ever bought between the two of us. VCRs, crystal vases that we got when we got married that have never been taken out of the boxes. A box, a paper box, filled with shit people have given us for gifts that we're like, what are we going to do with this? This is the re-gift box. three computer monitors, two keyboards, and a weird camera on rails that you would use to like enlarge photos that somebody gave me to make a bar out of. And it's been in here for four or five years. Because I was like, what do they even want out of this? I can't figure this out. But it was a pretty neat camera, so I never did anything with it. Well, that was the first thing that went outside. But I took all this stuff out. It filled up the entire floor of my shop. And I got a saw, cut the wall out, so the wall's open now. Took the door out, took the frame out, took the molding out, cut all the sheetrock out. So now all that's open to the shop. Redid the molding, moved the cabinet in there. And I'm going to be able to put my air compressor in there. So my air compressor has been the closet with the dust collector, and it's hard to get in and use. So I've never really used the air compressor since it's been in that closet. Well, I'm going to move it over here, and I think it's going to get way more used. but I'll be able to put all my like fabric and stuff like that in here. I'll have shelves. Like that's where all that's going to go in there, and it's going to work out perfect. But that's what I've been working on pretty much all week.
Nice.
It was a lot of fun. I had to take two studs down, and then I redid the header or whatever. So I sandwiched those studs I took down together and then rebuilt the header on top. And it's not a load-bearing wall. This is the load-bearing wall, not that one. But I just, I mean, I don't know. I think it looks really great for how quick I did it. And what was crazy, there were multiple times where I was like, oh, do I want to watch TV or do I want to go mess with that? And then I would just come back here and I'm like, oh my God, that was only 45 minutes and I got all the sheetrock down. Oh my God, this 2x4 came out so easily. You know, everything just kind of happened. And I'd come inside covered in sheetrock dust and I was like, this is amazing. This should have taken me 5 days because I put it off over and over and over again.
Right.
And I did have one other project I've been working on, but I'm going to save it for next week because I didn't have a positive resolution. But it involves something that last night I was like, you know what? I don't want to watch TV. I'm going to go out there and try to work on this. And I came outside. I was like, oh my God, I got them done. Everything's done. I'll be able to finish them tomorrow. And then I finished them and I was like, oh, fuck, maybe they're not done.
Well, I guess we'll see next week on that then.
What about you, Austin?
Just the shed building. But I also tore apart my shop like you, and I fully regret it. So I'm in the middle of a shop mix around, but it's not complete yet. So
yeah, you guys are a bunch of messes this week then. Messes.
Mess makers.
It ain't just this week, girlfriend. I'm a mess all the time.
That is true. Well, I actually posted, Dean didn't see it, but I've actually posted on Instagram today.
I saw that today.
And I've got a couple things scheduled. I'm finally getting a couple things from the leather projects that I mentioned, the boot purse that I did, and then Anna's journal that I did. And then I'm also working on a handle for the dog lead from Tony. I'm hoping by the time this episode comes out, I will have it shipped off to him already. But I need to wrap that up this weekend. But yeah, I mean, I've got some woodworking projects on my to do next, but I wanted to go ahead and get these leather ones out of the way since I was kind of in the leather zone. But, yeah, you know, I definitely enjoy them.
The plastic binder, that is not what when you were talking about it, that's not what I envisioned. I must have been thinking of a different kind of folder. So yeah, I would definitely do what you were talking about where you just don't use the plastic part next time.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that, I
was thinking it was like a thicker, you know, like not that thin.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So the next journal I need to make myself, I'm using the journal, but I want to put the plastic or I want to put the leather cover on. So yeah, I'm going to take the plastic off altogether. I've already cut my leather, piece. And like I said, I think I said last week, when I covered Anna's plastic binder with the leather, I was cutting the leather to fit the plastic. So my edges weren't straight and all that kind of stuff. So I think on this second one, I'll be real curious of how it kind of all works together because I went to school on the first one. And I mean, I'm okay, happy with it. Anna was really happy with it. But I think the second one, I will have learned enough on the first one that I think there'll be a big improvement. And I'm going to do some leather carving on the front of it. I think I'm going to do a tree or something along the line of that. Cause I enjoy stamping and carving, leather a lot. Sure. So that's kind of my plan on that. But yeah, I've got a lot of projects to do.
When you're doing journals, do you always do that same size journal?
Yes.
Is it like a yellow notepad size?
No, it's an A5 is what it's called, but it's like I don't know. It's like a 9 by.
It's 9 by 11.5. Is that what it
no,
is?
No, 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 no. It's not. It's not that big. It is. This one is a 7 by 9.
Oh, okay. So it's like my dad's journal.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Okay. And I like that size or slightly smaller of that because it fits in my purse. Right. And that's what a couple of the purses that I've made in the past were specifically that size in order for my journal to fit. Because I'm a visual person with a lot of things. So I know I keep my calendar on my phone, on my laptop, you know, as far as a lot of my schedule stuff. But I also keep all of that stuff on in my physical journal because I like to see stuff on paper. I like to write lists out because that's how I remember stuff. And I like to physically check mark off when something's done. So I've tried a lot of other ways of just doing, you know, everything on my phone or everything on the computer as far as organizational and tracking. Right. But man, I'm really attached to a journal.
Yeah. I feel like there's two kinds of people in the world, and there's people who get really jacked up about going to Staples, and then there's normal people.
Staple. Anytime, anything office related, I need new pens. I don't need new pens, but I'm going to buy new pens. I need some new markers.
Well, I've got a website for you for pens.
Dry erase board. Well, no, I want like multiple colors.
I got you. You want the four click, the blue, the green, the red.
Oh, I would have loved to have one of those when I was a kid, but they were a little expensive. So I never had one of them.
Yeah, they're like at least $4.
Yeah. Well, back then, you know. We'd like to take a minute and thank the folks over at Patreon for their financial support. On our top tier, we've got Marion Ward from Creative Ward Gallery, Scott Oren from Daddy Yourself, Ozark Spirit, Chris Shelby, and Nick Birchtold.
Tonight, our guest is Max King from Camp Arrowhead for Boys. How's it going, Max?
Pretty good.
Max, why don't you tell our listeners just a little bit about yourself?
Like you said, my name's Max. I own and direct Camp Arrowhead for Boys in North Carolina. We do a lot of outdoor stuff, but we also have a pretty hard focus on making and outdoor skills.
And we're not here tonight necessarily to talk about Camp Arrowhead for Boys. We're here to talk about your maker swap item from last year's maker camp. You made a knife. Tell us a little bit about this knife.
It was all things considered, a fairly giant obsidian knife with an antler handle on a cedar base of wood I milled on our sawmill.
And you make this out of fear of White Walkers in New York or?
Dragon glass for sure, yeah.
Okay. So if the listeners haven't figured this out, this is a splint nap stone knife blade. And so tell us, why stone? Why not steel?
I do run Camp Arrowhead, so we got to kind of go with arrowheads. But I've actually been flint napping since I was pretty young. My dad was an archaeologist, anthropologist, and he taught me in middle school. And then I didn't do it for a while, and then I picked it up again right before my kids were born. And then I bought a camp called Arrowhead, and then so we ran with it. And so it's just kind of one of those more original things that I could have brought. And so I said, well, I'll just go ahead and do this. And then the next year, I brought a knife 2 years ago, and then I brought another one this year. And then that's when Austin let us do the flint napping class.
Yeah, and it's awesome because it was super unique. And I took the flint napping class. Chrissy, did you take it?
No, I didn't get over there, but I really wish I would have.
Yeah, well, Emin and I, the day of a Stormageddon, Emin and I hit out in the flint napping tent first thing. That was the first class we ran to on the Saturday. And we got to make arrowheads, and it was really neat.
As the water rose.
Yeah, as the water rose. It was like a flood down in Texas. I heard Stevie Ray Vaughan playing in the distance. I think the best way to attack this is, let's talk about flint napping. What is flint napping?
It's the process of taking the appropriate type stone and reducing it through various methods that we can talk about until it gets down to kind of a lens shape, and that you can then flake off a little more and have it sharp. And it's not necessarily a permanent edge or a maintainable edge. It's kind of use it and rework it and then eventually lose it because there's always more rocks.
Yeah, there's always more rocks. Oh, and so that probably plays into the construction of the knife that we'll get to. I wanted to start with stone choice. What kind of stones are appropriate for flint napping?
Usually you have things in the flint family, but in America we call that chert because in England they got real picky about flint and said, this is our stone. So we're going to only call it flint if it's from England. But we have all sorts of flint, which is really chert. There's rhyolite. You can get them in the Southeast. A lot of people made them out of quartz way back, and that's tough as hell.
Yeah.
You have to use a whole different materials to work that. But obsidian and flint are probably what most people generally think of when they see a flint napped item. Obsidian's the volcanic glass, which is super pretty.
Yeah. So black volcanic glass. And if you've watched Game of Thrones, it's the dragon glass that they used to fight the White Walkers. When I was there, you gave me a Texas stone. A light gray. What kind of rock was that?
It was some sort of Texas chert. I think Justin hooked you up with that because he said, oh, you're from Texas. Here's something that's really, 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 really hard to work.
Yeah, well, it wasn't bad. And so speaking of really, really hard to work, when y'all put on the course, one of the things you said was like, you're going to start and you're not going to understand, but then all of a sudden you're going to get what you're trying to do here. So would you kind of walk us through the steps of, you take a big rock, what is it that you look for to start? And then what's kind of the manual process, maybe kind of the tools that you use?
So yeah, most of these rocks, you can't really just get them out of the creek or something because of freeze and thaw cycle, you know, and they get micro fractures over time. So most of it's quarried out in big boulders or whatever. And then you spall those boulders down and you make what's called a spall, which is like in between size, between boulder and something you can hold in your hand. And then you work that down with a, through direct percussion with either an antler billet or rocks, other rocks, harder rocks. And I'm doing a lot of hand motions here because that's the easiest way for me to think through this process. And then you get, you, there's a zigzag on the shape is ultimately what you kind of go for. And then you try to take off the low points. And so if there's like a triangle shape that's pointing downwards, that's pointing the direction you're going to take off the material. So you're going to hit it on that part or pressure flake it off that part. But if you're reducing from larger to smaller, then you take a flake off of that. And then you can take that flake in your hand with a pressure flaker, which would be like with an antler or a copper pressure flaker, you would take your flakes off then, and then you can kind of reduce that, shape that into what would ultimately be something pointy that you could attach to a stick or an arrow or a knife handle.
That was one thing that kind of grabbed me, was the raw material. There's no one, like, you're not going to see a rock in nature that you're like, oh wow, that's the shape I'm looking for, because right, you're really just breaking a rock until it gets down to a manageable size,
right? And even obsidian boulders, they just look like other boulders. They don't look like black glass out there. You have to be like, oh yeah, you have to crack it open to even know what's inside of that, because it's all like cobbles.
And so you talked about a copper flaker. What's that tool kind of look like, and what's the process of using it?
You can get, the modern ones are all Darylin rods with a copper rod inside that. It's set in there with some set screws, and then that's in a Darylin handle. The old school way would have been an antler tip, but I kind of like the copper because it has more control, because it's soft enough to bite into the edge of the material without crushing it. Because if you use the steel one, it would crush the edge because it's too hard.
Sure.
And so once you're making sure you're protecting your hand, yeah, you can push into that edge and put all your force into it. And then at the last second, you kind of aim down, and that, so the force travels deep and then down, and that'll peel it off, thinning it without, well, I mean, hopefully not snapping it in half, but you will break it.
And that's exactly what you're doing. You're kind of like peeling the rock sides off. Because if you're just smashing the shit out of it, it's going to be just dust and pebbles. Mm-hmm. Yep. Or it's going to be dull, and you're trying to get it to flake to a point. And that was the thing that like had to click, was that you're not just trying to break pieces off. You're trying to make this fracture that peels layers, kind of.
Yeah, and then honestly, the sharpest thing you can still get is just a fresh flake off of a spall of obsidian. That is the sharpest thing in the world. You can cut molecules in half, they say, or something like that. If you look at it under a microscope, it's completely smooth. But like if you put a real sharp razor under there, it's, that looks like a saw compared. It's just amazing how sharp obsidian can be.
Well, let's talk about your obsidian blade. How big was the final blade, and how big was the rock you started with?
This is where Justin's going to laugh at me, because I did a different method of flint knapping for that blade than we were teaching you guys.
Sure.
So material's hard to get, and there are people who slab out obsidian into thin rectangles.
Sure.
And then you can do what's called slab knapping, which is you put your flaker up at a 45, and then you basically are ripping flakes off of a ground slab. And it's just a more efficient use of material. Some people think it's cheating, but it looks really good.
Yeah.
Because the amount of material I'd have to go through to get a knife that big, which I think was about 8 inches long, just the blade, from a boulder would be impossible. You'd have to be world class.
Yeah, that's one thing I noticed, because it truly, I mean, and you had several knives on display at the, in the tent, and they looked like blades. And then when I'm flint knapping, you're getting all these jagged lines. And I'm like, how do you get something 8 inches straight?
Or that, like, thin.
Yeah, it should have looked like a scythe or something, the way my experience was going.
Yeah, so it's a good way to make it so it looks good, is more successful than normal flint knapping. I still break those things in half, which is a real pain in the ass, because then I have to regrind them. But with material as hard as it is to get sometimes, it is kind of a nice, efficient use of it. But that's how you also make sure you get a pretty piece and make the most of it too, because that guy can make 10 slabs instead of one arrowhead.
Sure.
Out of a one rock.
Is there any other cheating done here? I mean, do you have a 2x72 out there and you're putting fake marks on it and everything?
No, not that. No, I will reshape it if I break it on a stained glass grinder, the wet.
Yeah, okay.
Diamond thing. I love that tool. But that's the only, and Justin can't do that kind of napping. Don't tell him, but he only does the old way. So it means it's hard.
And then what is some practical uses you've done with these flint nap knives? He's laughing.
Knives, not so much. I mean, you can cut something and they look cool. They're pretty and they look good on the shelf.
You never made dinner with one and like, hey, babe,
no,
put the
fancy
stuff up.
No, I think I cut a tomato or something, but then you got to worry about little micro flakes in your kids' food, so you can't really feed them.
Okay,
stuff
yeah.
like that.
Oh, yeah.
Kids ruin everything.
I mean, I've cut leather with a raw flake. Like, you could butcher a deer a lot easier than you could, prep dinner, right? So, sure. And that knife that I made isn't really good for butchering. Again, it's more pretty, but arrowheads we've made that we can shoot, yeah. Spear throwing darts, yeah, that's easy because that's just another pointy bit, but it's really just about impact. So I mean, it doesn't even have to be that sharp, and most of the things, arrowheads and stuff, aren't actually that sharp, so it's just strong.
Could you imagine going on a crime spree with a flint nap, obsidian knife? They'd be like, the guy who committed this crime is, we carbon dated the weapon, it's 4,000 years old.
Or he's a 45-year-old guy with a very, very low count YouTube channel.
Hey, I don't know if we're kingmakers or not, but
there are a lot of those guys out there.
I'm not saying our last guest blew up after being on this podcast, but it does happen.
I'm not 45 either. I'm just saying there's a lot of really old dudes on there's a lot of old dudes on YouTube who have the worst filming skills, and you just can't see what they're doing in their hands.
Yeah, they're flint napping and it's off screen. You see technique here and it's just their knee. You showed me a little thigh I didn't want to see.
And a lot of them don't wear safety glasses, which just baffles me. I heard one guy on YouTube say that he wears contacts, and that means he's safe from micro flakes getting in his eyeballs. And I said, well, okay, enjoy blindness, because that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That stuff is sharp. That's what we warned you guys about Maker Camp, is the little pieces that get in your socks.
Yeah, you did say that.
Because you'll just look down, your shoe's full of blood, and you're like, wait, what happened?
Oh, gosh.
Because it doesn't hurt.
All right. And for the record, you referenced 45-year-old men being old. For the record, 45 is not old.
I know.
But anyway.
But the guys who flint nap who are 45 look old. Those guys look ancient.
All right. Well, I want to move us into attaching the blade to the handle and the handle construction and what you got going on there.
Okay.
So walk us through the process of attaching that blade to the handle.
To the antler? Yeah, I think I used a big piece of antler there. I got a lot of that antler from a specific Etsy shop that has big, chunky, beautiful handles that doesn't have extra spikes. They're just gorgeous.
Right.
Really chunky, base to it. And so what I do is I just use a bandsaw and I cut a notch out. And then I have been using a combination of real pitch glue, which is beeswax, pine pitch, and a little, I think the recipe calls for rat poop, but I don't think mine has rat poop in it. I mean, rabbit poop. and then I've been using that to put a little backside on the notch when I put the knife in and seat the knife. And then I've been cheating and using some Total Boat mixed with black ink on both sides of that, just because I don't want it to fall apart.
Yeah. Right,
it's a big knife.
Yeah.
And then I use some artificial sinew around that. And then I put a little extra of the pitch glue on top of that. But it's super easy once you get the pitch glue smeared on the blade and you just kind of put it in there and hold it for a second. And it dries solid enough for the epoxy not to run through. So it's my little cheating process, but it works and it looks good and it doesn't fall off in a warm summer day, and the pitch glue just softens and then the blade would start rocking away from the handle slowly. But yeah, so I've avoided that by using a little bit of dyed Total Boat.
How durable is the blade itself?
Not at all.
Okay.
I mean,
so no bushwhacking with machinery. No.
I mean, if it was flint, it'd be a little better, but the obsidian ones, I mean, you just gotta be careful because this stuff is fragile. I mean, it is glass. And so if you're walking around and with it in your pocket and it breaks, you're going to feel it in your leg.
Right.
Wow. Yeah. I was curious, how far is that in as far as the tang that's in the antler? Is it half an inch or
inch and a half, maybe? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Not too far. As far as
the wrap is how deep it is. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm with you now. I do, on my bucket list of things to make, I do want to make a knife with an antler handle. So I'm curious, what do I need to know? What's my preparation for using an antler to make a handle for a knife?
I mean, I just kind of go with it, right? I just put it in the bandsaw and hope it didn't break, and it worked.
Oh, okay.
And it's worked for me multiple times now, so I go with that.
Okay.
You can also, what I've done before is I've used a Dremel with a diamond burr on it and kind of routed out the pithy middle part.
Oh, okay. Because that's what I was curious of, because, you know, the inside of a bone can be very, you know, porous and,
yeah, yeah.
and possibly not hold very well. So I was kind of curious.
Some people, I think, put super glue on the butt end too, just to kind of seal it up. Yeah, you can definitely use some super glue in there to harden up that pithy center.
Right. Yeah. Cause that's kind of what I was curious of too. It's got a great, I mean, they, whoever you're ordering this from, it's a great color on that handle.
Oh, and it's like also got all the texture on it too. It's not even comfortable with hand, but it looks really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
The shop name, can I say that? Cause it's weird,
but it's
Furries, but all she sells, it's F-U-R-R-I-E-S. Yeah, I know, right?
Austin shops there, I think.
But all it is like bones, feathers, and fur, but not
interesting.
Not that kind of furry. I think more literal, not
interesting.
Internet wise.
That's yeah.
I have a question for you. What have you ever smelled anything worse than the inside of an antler?
Yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say, how do you combat like the smell? Because it
doesn't
awful.
Bother me that bad.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not really burning it too bad. It's not. I mean, burning hair is not as bad. Like the camp I grew up at, we were doing some bushcraft skills, and this kid brought a turkey wing in, and he wanted to make a whistle out of the wing bone. But I guess this had been sitting around for a while. So when they drilled into it, the rancidness that came out of that.
Oh, really?
That was bad. That was way worse.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I have to like clean out my whole dust collection system.
Really?
After work. Oh man, I'm sensitive to smell. So
okay,
yeah.
Now you had mentioned the sinew is the artificial, so that didn't.
I do
come
use
from
artificial.
It didn't come with
the pieces you get from a deer are about that long, six inches long, and I don't really want to put that in my mouth either. Like I'm good with a lot of things, but like you're supposed to like soak it in your mouth and pull it out, and then wrap one little layer, and then another little layer, and then another. And I'm like, I don't have time for that. And it's like transparent when you use real stuff. So I like the artificial stuff because it gives it a little more color and makes it look a little better. And it also holds better. Well, I mean, it doesn't hold better because it doesn't shrink, because the real stuff shrinks when it dries, like a rawhide would. But it's just the next level of, I'm not going to do that.
And then walk us through as far as like you've got a cedar plank or a cedar piece
that's the first tree I cut down at the summer camp when we bought it.
It
was a dead cedar tree.
Uh-huh.
And we had a pine tree that did fall down, and I got a chainsaw mill, and I said, well, I got three boards off. And I said, well, that's the worst thing I've ever done in my life.
Mm.
And so we bought for the camp a big sawmill on a trailer that's just like a pushing bandsaw mill.
Uh-huh.
And so we cut that cedar up, and it's been drying for a while. So I've been kind of working through that a little by little, and then polishing it up and making nice little stands out of it. And then I glue buckskin on the bottom of that.
So it sits
nice on a shelf. And then the little risers I make on the Glowforge.
I thought that was acrylic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I put a little buckskin on the little loops I made on those too, so that way it doesn't slide off, because I was terrified of people at Maker Camp rushing it and it falling to its doom.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause actually like when I helped with handing things out at Maker's Camp, the items here. And so before that all started, I went through taking pictures of specific ones that we wanted to talk about on the podcast. I've taken a picture of the tag and the item. Cause I'm like, I don't want to lose an opportunity. And I'm like, we've got to talk about the specific item. Now, as far as like milling down the cedar, I know I worked on a project that had some cedar, and man, it is so potent, the smell. And did you do most everything working it up outside, or were you in a shop?
I just
did
it in my garage. I like the smell of cedar too. I mean, it covered up the antler, I guess, but
maybe that's the key. You need that combination.
No, I'm like rubbing that stuff on my face. It smells so good. I love cedar. Gosh.
A lot of people do. I mean, it's definitely a good smell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I just finished that stuff with a little bit of, I think, tung oil, and then just the wax, and it looks great.
Yeah. Yeah. It is definitely a beautiful item, because I was snagging a picture.
The best part of that knife is when you held it up to the sun, though, because it was real transparent in places and had crazy flow inside of it of like different colors and swirlies.
Who ended up getting that?
I think Matt Serio.
Oh, wow, okay.
But he hasn't posted about it, so he said he would.
he listens to the podcast, so he's going to get the hint.
He's busy sending out books. Max, do you remember what you got in the swap?
I got a little coffee scoop from Fiery Ice Forge, one of the Broadbeck guys, I think.
Oh, cool, nice.
Yeah. Little copper hammered one. I like that little doming with the hammer marks.
So I was curious, what are some of the other weapons you've made in this primitive fashion? And then when it comes to the boys at camp, what do you allow them to work on?
Well, most everything we make, we let the boys do. Okay. They've made, like in our blacksmith shop, they've made tomahawks. They've made knives. We made a bunch of root ball war clubs this year.
Oh, nice.
I can grab one off the wall. Actually, I'll just tilt this. It's over there. You see that on it? No, it's behind the chair. But you just dig up a root ball of a sapling that's growing on top of a hill and you pull it out and cut it off and polish it up, and it's dangerous. And the kids go home with those. Justin did one though, and he put a giant flint knife on the back of it, like a gunstock war club would be. We made atlatls.
How do you stop the kids from killing themselves?
I mean, they don't get to keep it in their cabins. That's the key, right? They make it, they fondle it for a little bit, and then it goes away until parents pick them up and you say, hey, here's all the fun things you guys have to deal with now.
Here's a bunch of weapons to take home.
Right. Here's a little Ziploc full of the arrowheads, because if they kept them in their pockets, they would have been bleeding from their legs
stabbed
by now.
And bleeding.
Yeah. They're like, oh, I want to keep it in my cabin. I just want, no. We'll keep that in the office. Don't worry.
That's really
cool.
Yeah,
they're just having fun. They're not really... There's no intent when we're making them. It's not like they're making this for a purpose. They're just making it to learn. So they have a lot of fun doing it. And they feel like they're like, oh, I'm doing something my mom would never let me do, which is like half of our marketing.
Yeah.
So I have a question as somebody who also runs a camp. Mine is with drunk old people, but
the same as a 12-year-old. I mean, it's fine.
It's basically the same. What are some of your tips for when you have that big of a crowd and you're trying to teach something like blacksmithing or flint napping or something, and you have a larger crowd? Do you have any good tips for that?
Well, we usually limit certain things to a certain size. Like our blacksmith shop has 8 anvil stations, and so if one or two adults is in there, they can kind of handle it walking up and down the middle. We don't flint nap. Like at Maker Camp, we didn't even have that many people because we reset to Austin. Like this is as many as we can run safely with our supervision. I mean, I saw a video of a flint napper the other day who had like 40 people and he was just kind of walking in a big circle. That was like, that's never going to work. We also are firm believers in you just have to know a little bit more than the people you're teaching. So that helps
a little bit more. Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a matter of, you know, like positioning yourself. If like when we were teaching at Maker Camp, we sat kind of in between two halves of the group. If there are 8 people in there, there was 4 on this side of me and Justin and 4 on the other side. And right. So that way I could control these 4, the closest to me, and he could control the 4 closest to him. And it's just, you know, having kind of a good banter too was nice, because then we could just talk across and talk crap and then keep it entertaining while also having fun and teaching them something cool and old.
One thing y'all did I really liked in my class, there was a young lady and y'all were very encouraging, and it was nice to see that something that can be kind of difficult, you didn't ignore or, you know, discount, hey, you only have an hour, you can't, you know, y'all helped her along, and it made everything else seem you know, I wasn't that worried about it. If y'all could get her to figure it out, if I was struggling, y'all could help me too.
Well, that's our bread and butter, right? Like teaching kids. So that's what we're both good at. I mean, Justin's a teacher year round. I mean, and I just run a camp. So we're just, when there were kids in the tent, it was easy. The adults are a little more difficult.
One of the newer segments to the podcast, we like to ask people about their closest accident or nearest death experience. And I have to imagine during flint napping, you've had to have some that shed some blood.
Nothing.
Story you'd like to share with us?
I was listening to your previous ones and I had a different story that was not flint napping related. That was recent, but
let's hear it. Let's hear that one.
Well, we were unloading gravel, or we were trying to get gravel in the camp this summer, at the end of the summer. And there's a steep hill after a bridge on a gravel road. And, my business partner has a 1974, dump truck, small thing. And it couldn't get up the hill. So I got the tractor and I tried to push it and that didn't work. And then so I backed the tractor down, turned it around, and then they were about to open the back, and then the parking brake gave way, and it came barreling down gravel and all towards the tractor, and I had to leap off of the tractor into the woods, and then the tractor took it like a champ.
The tractor took it.
Oh, yeah. It just bent a couple of times on our gravel rake on the back, but I was I just remember being like, all right, well, I guess I have to jump now, and jumped off the tractor.
Yeah. That's the like wrong a train side. In the movie kind of thing.
Yeah. That's the story I had prepared. I don't remember the times I've bled flint napping because I didn't, because it's happened a lot.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, nothing serious. I haven't had to go to the hospital. I mean, there are people who do, like, oh, I've severed an artery, but I'm usually a little more careful than that. And I don't do it in shorts and Crocs like Justin does.
Yeah, I have a bad habit. I'm in flip-flops right now, and my shop is a mess. I don't know what it is. Just, I don't want my toes constrained, you know?
Well, I did that once when my wife was pregnant with our first kid, and I was doing all the wood floor in our house because she said, you have to do this before we have a kid. And I had a jigsaw on the floor with the blade still just sitting there. And I was walking through my house at 11 o'clock at night barefoot, and I caught it on the jigsaw and ripped my foot open. And so, and she's like 8 months pregnant and is teaching still. So it was a school day. And so I was like, I guess I'll super glue this, huh? And so that's what we did. You
show up to the hospital and it's like, who are y'all here for?
Yeah, I was like, so the next day I was like, okay, I'll go get a tetanus shot. But, and they're like, you glued this? I'm like, yeah, but. So yeah, I didn't have to get stitches, but you gotta be careful being barefoot in your shop, Dean.
I know we're big on not making this about us, but I had a flip flop walking through the shop, stepped on a metal plate that had the end bent, the end stuck in the flip flop. And so when I picked up my foot, the metal piece of metal came up with me, sliced right across the back of my leg. My wife was running, and when she runs, she's gone for like an hour or two. And so she came home, and I was laying on the floor in the shop. There was bloody footprints across the shop, and I was just laying there with my shirt around my leg. It's like, hey, can you help me out with some Band-Aids? But so we also have a segment called This or That, where we throw some questions your way.
Okay.
And the first one I had was, if you could pick up Camp Arrowhead and move it to another state, which state would you like to relocate to?
I have to relocate it?
Yes.
Okay. Somewhere in the Southwest.
Okay, like in Arizona or...
But like in the fall. I wouldn't want to be a summer camp. I'd be like, let's change the school schedule too, so I can do this in the fall.
I'm with you. Arizona in the fall. I like it. All right. What is one piece of equipment or shop space you would like to bring to your camp to maybe expand what you can offer to the kids?
I'd like to turn our big old horse barn, which is a big timber frame building they built in 1990, like with the kids, but we don't do horses anymore. I'd like to like kind of gut that and make it into like a big maker barn where we could have bigger tools and have a little more space for our wood shop and stuff too, and have reasons to have bigger equipment that we could teach them on.
Have you ever considered having adult classes or adult camp kind of things there too?
Yeah, I think we have an adult summer camp that's kind of happened at the end of this summer with some people who are gung-ho about it, but we do group rentals. We've done a couple blacksmithing classes with father-son groups and other adults, but usually, you know, the cost of like us also preparing food and classes is kind of hard, but if they do their own food, we'll teach you classes. We'll do whatever you want. We'll throw tomahawks. It's good.
That's cool.
I always do it at your wedding too.
Do your wedding there. There you go. I always wanted a horse barn to park cars in. Every stall is just another car.
You want a different horse barn. Our horse barn is not that.
Horse power barn. There you go. Yeah, that's what we have to call it.
Agricultural use.
Yeah. So I had two more. One was, what's your personal favorite summer camp memory?
Meeting my future wife and then proposing to her at that camp later.
Oh wow. Nice.
That was an aggressive 8-year-old.
Oh yeah. No, that was when I was a counselor at the camp I grew up at. Yeah.
Nice.
And then what's your favorite camp related movie?
The Goonies. One I like to show the most. That's pretty fun. And kids don't usually know it. Heavyweights was filmed at a camp like down the road from us. So I felt bad saying that.
Yeah.
Like it literally is in the same town. And then What Hot American Summer. I don't know if I can say that and keep my job.
All right, cool. So we've reached the part of the podcast where we like to talk about the three tools. So if you were going to, I'd like to switch it up just a little bit instead of just your shop. If you were going to bring three tools into the camp, what would be your first three tools that you'd want to bring in, or your next three?
Well, I prepared for myself, but it's all my tools are at camp anyway, so I'm going to go with it.
Okay.
If I had to start over, I would do a bandsaw because I love bandsaws. I would keep my Ameribraid grinder because I use that thing for woodwork and metalwork all the time. And it is the best thing I've ever bought. And then the third one I haven't fully isolated to whether it's the sawmill or the coal iron press we have, because that's also fun.
Oh, you have a press.
Yeah.
You guys are kitted up.
Yeah, we got all the good stuff. Even heat sent us the kiln this year too.
Nice.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But the bandsaw and the Maribator, I can do everything with that.
Right on. Yeah, that sounds, that's good. Good choices. And so we really appreciate you coming on the podcast tonight. If you would, please tell everybody where they can find you.
Yeah. We are at camparrowhead.com or Camp Arrowhead for Boys on Instagram. We're on Facebook too. I don't really know how to say that. I can't remember what the link is. And we are, that's our places. But yeah, and we're in North Carolina. So come send your boys here. And
I'll send them home with weapons.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Have a good night.
Later, Max. Right.
Bye.
Good night. If you'd like to join the folks over at Patreon, it's patreon.com/makingourwaypodcast. And our middle tier, we've got Tony Langer from Lingerworks, Susan DePlantis from Hearth and Garden Art, Stephanie Taddeo, Kyle with Footwork Woodworking, Dwayne McDowell, and Eric from Overall Makerworks.
So guys, I was thinking about how he was talking about flint knapping and some of the different processes that I've been doing this year. And the difference of or differences between additive and subtractive making. Ooh. I've done so much with machining. I'm always subtract, like my brain works as subtract, right? Most of the time. And then when I got the 3D printer, that's all additive. It's basically a glue gun spinning things out. And then welding is kind of additive, right? So how do you guys, you know, when your natural state, are you thinking as subtractive or additive when you're making things?
So it's funny, like when I'm in my modify mode, it's usually subtractive. And then, it's not. It's usually additive because I'm like adding stickers or adding things to it.
Your logos, right?
But the laser is, the way I use it is subtractive. When I'm using the lathe to turn, like wood turning and stuff, that's all. It's almost like you're building up to take back down.
Right.
And so that is an interesting thing. And then which one do you find more enjoyment in? I think I like additive more. I love super glue. I love gluing things together to make something new out of different stuff. I like taking two things and combining them. So maybe it's even like,
yeah.
So isn't that kind of funny? Like, if I'm doing subtractive making, I normally add stuff together so I can reduce it down. But mm-hmm. if I'm doing additive making, I almost kind of break two things down so that I can build them back together, if that makes sense.
Right.
Like taking two piles, like deconstructing and then rebuilding. Yeah. They're very yin and yang.
Yeah. With just machining, it's for me, it's always subtractive. Like you have to start with bigger stock and end with smaller stock. Like that's just how it works. So it's with a 3D printer, it's always been interesting to me because I'm like, you can just like make whatever shape you want. Like there's no, it was hard for me to get out of my norm, you know, of like, I need something this big to make something smaller. Well, no, as long as you got a reel of plastic, you're good. And then, I even see it on Instagram where I'll see a guy, he machines a part and then he welds another part to it and then puts it back in the lathe and then machines it again. And I'm like, I never think to do that. Like it's not in my workflow. I'm always like, well, I'm going to need a big ass piece, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's pretty interesting with that. What about you, Chrissy? Is there anything that.
Yeah. I mean, this is something that it's never really crossed my mind, but I mean, like when I kind of go with the bigger piece and the subtractive approach, you know, like if I'm going to.
Yeah. If you're power carving.
Yeah. If I'm power carving or if I'm turning or if I'm, you know, because I tend to have way more material when I start than what I'm going to end up with. And that's like even like with the journal covers, the leather working stuff, I'm not taking a lot off, but you know, the carving process and right. cutting back what I don't need and whatever.
But like you're woodworking. I mean, unless you're power carving excluded.
Right. Right.
You're gluing shit back together. So it's
additive. Again, you're going from a tree, you're reducing it down to
and then going back.
Dimensional lumber and then going back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, especially because like if I'm working with a slab, okay, well, I have to cut this slab up in 14 pieces. And then glue it in the right combination of the way it needs to be put together. or, you know, using a combination of materials to, I mean, I think that's kind of been more my thing than anything lately, is I want the more types of materials I can put together, you know, the leather and the wood for the boot person. And then I've got a few more things coming up, and I want to combine materials as much as anything. But I think you're right. Even like with the welding, you know, that's just glue and metal together. So that's kind of an additive approach.
The real stress is any of this subtractive ones where you are only starting in a place like with a piece of rock and you're subtracting to a knife. And if you go too far, you're screwed, and you have to keep going until you reach that stopping point. And so like you on the CNC or the mill or the lathe, I'm sorry. That's definitely, I mean, yeah, you'll ruin a couple $100 piece of brass or copper if you go too far, or you get your dimensions wrong. And really, it's not like you can just go weld it back together. I mean,
yeah, most, and it depends on the alloy, but most of the time you're screwed, man. And that's what, well, you know what bites a lot of people when they first get started in machining too, is like they'll machine a big part down and they're putting so much heat in the part and they're measuring as they go. That part is swole. It's, you know, it's expanded because of the heat. It's so hot. You have to wait till it cools down. And a lot of people blow it. They, and you don't realize how much metal swells when it's hot. And so they'll blow all their tolerances because they, you know, they go past where they should be. And then once it cools down, it shrinks down on them.
Yeah.
I never think about that shrinking.
Hem my pants, 'cause I'm so short. You know, you measure, and if you just go too short, now you've got shorts and you don't have pants anymore. That's how George were made. Somebody was doing subtractive hemming, and they just went too far, and so like, well, fuck it, might as well fray the edges, making us some jorts.
That's right, new style. Thanks for joining us today. If you like this episode, please give us a review and subscribe. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on Instagram at Making Our Way Podcast or on Patreon. You can find all of our latest individual content on Instagram or YouTube. I'm at High Caliber Craftsman. Dean is at Dean_Duplantis. And Christy is at Twisted Twine Woodworking. Lick it, stick it, see you later, bye.
And our first tier of patrons are Jacob from Griffin Makes, Jacob from Other Dog Designs, Keith Drennan from Blackthorn Concept, Justin from Bear Make It, Jeff Stein, a weird guy, Dave Bauer, Caitlin Landerno, Morley Kurt, Greg from Platte Valley Woodworks, Brendan McDonough from McDonough Designs, the Grant Alexander, Jen Griffin, the Black Sheep, Brian from Moonshine Leatherworks, the Makeshift Podcast, Maritime Knife Supply, Henry at HT1 Metalworks, Brad from Brad's Customs, Steve Delaney, a one old school pirate, Kelsey Watson, Dan Gallagher, Goofballs by Dan, Chris Powell, Full Steam Design, Spaghetti and Waffles, Rebecca Johansson, Ira Housewort, Ed Johns from ButtJoints.com, Dave Beckwith, Rob DeMarco, Dave at Atomic Airship Works, Earl the Third XYZ, Dana and Emmett at Rescue Room on Summit, Max at Camp Arrowhead, and Luke at LJB Makes. Thanks a bunch, folks.